All right, gents. We are fixing to be on the record.
Oh, put the needle on the record, Bryce.
For the After Talk program. Welcome, everybody. Hello.
Yo, yo.
Hello. So, Bryce, you did not see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
I didn't, but I got a good idea of what's in it.
Chris Pratt.
Okay. I bet Zoe Saldana's in it.
So you have seen it.
Well, I've heard of it. I've seen some of the, I think historically, I've seen some of the historical documents.
Should we announce when we cross into spoilering time? Or
are you going to
Bryce has a topic. Maybe we should start with Bryce's topic so non-spoiler people can hear that, and then we'll get into the spoilery.
Okay. Over the weekend, you guys know the Drive to Survive show on Netflix?
Yes. Thanks to you.
The one that put F1 on the map, that's finally. Right.
Finally.
Yeah, no one knew about it till that show.
It invented F1. Codemasters, who make a lot of the racing games, used to, I guess, still technically.
Codemasters did, was it Arma back in the day?
They make these F1 games.
I know them
games.
As military sims, so
So they've been making the F1 games for a while, and some other different racing series, including one called Grid. It's like a street racing series. So last year, the year before, they had a game called Grid Legends, and it had a story mode called, it's a good thing that I can't remember the name of what the thing is, but it's got a story mode that is set up like Drive to Survive. Like, they actually live action shot a bunch of footage with human actors on an LED on a video screen wall. And so as you progress through the chapters of the story, you're actually watching this story that you are ostensibly a part of play out on a TV show. And it like looks like Drive to Survive. They even like set up the interviews with the little the grid you can see in the background and all that stuff. It's interesting. I think that's an interesting way to tell a story like that.
So you are the player, but
you're like a rookie driver being thrown into this team.
They don't do anything so nutty as like ask you to record an interview onto a webcam that gets integrated into it, because that all seems increasingly part of the sports world is being good on TV along with playing whatever sport it is.
Yeah, no, this is more. You're just like the unnamed rookie. You're driver 22.
Got it.
But they don't. Yeah, they don't like integrate you into the live action footage at all.
A bit like your name being Hunter in the Marvel Midnight Suns.
Yeah. But it's neat. You know, you start with a rival and a teammate, and then that kind of changes a little bit. I don't know. It's an interesting way to tell that story, because that live action production, especially for a video game, can be like really out of pocket, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
You don't even know if they're going to do it well, let alone write a good script or anything. But I thought it was an interesting way to basically watch a Sun length television show.
Did they get actual established talent like on loan from ESPN or anybody
else?
No, because they did do that. That's the opening of Ted Lasso, right? No. Is they got the actual guy from the actual sports network to talk about like Ted Lasso.
This is EA. They're not going to spend that kind of money on something that doesn't have Madden or F1. Or
yeah.
That.
Okay. Maybe. Also, before anybody writes in, I said Arma. Arma used to be called Operation Flashpoint, and it was by Codemasters.
Everyone knows Brian was right.
You can only do a show with Tom Merritt for so long before you begin to get infected with, like, the moment you say a thing and you question whether or not it's right, you want to fact check, and you're like, let me correct before you write, and we're good.
And the emails can come in anyway, but you'll be like, nope, I said that. I said that on the show. All right. So G3, Brian and I watched it separately, not together, unlike G1, which we actually were lucky enough to be in the same town when we watched together. And I had some parallel, which was we watched it in an AMC dine-in theater back when it premiered 10 years ago. I went with another friend of mine and watched it in a different dine-in theater, but it was a dine-in theater experience nonetheless. And the movie itself, we're going to get a little bit spoilery. So if you don't want to hear anything at all, stop now. Give you a moment, take a breath, pull the car over safely to the side of the road, press stop. Okay, good. It is got a lot of beats that look back on those last two movies, especially that first movie.
Yeah, it's I believe the marketing clearly says a send-off to the Guardians franchise. And, mm-hmm. and of course, as we've reported over the last 10 years, you know, James Gunn has got canceled, uncanceled, and then found himself emperor of the DC universe and all of that stuff. But the movie leans into the, basically, if there's one message, 10 years, guys, am I right? You know, and I'm sure it was even longer for the people working on it. I spent most of the movie crying because, and Bryce already knows this, and I think I told you, Tom, but
you did.
But the day that the Friday of the premiere, a friend of my 10-year-old daughter, her mother, just out of nowhere, died unexpectedly. I had met her 5 days previous, and then snap, she's dead. And so I told Bryce on Friday, I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna go explain to my 10-year-old daughter what happened." And we did, and we, I mean, obviously, to her friend, this is a life-changing traumatic event, but it's weird to try to give advice to a 10-year-old about how they should process it. And she was sad and shocked, and we talked about, as best we understand it, the way grief comes in waves. And at first, you know, your friend is going to be sad, and then she'll be okay, and then she'll be sad again, and then she'll be okay, and you will be sad, and then you'll be okay, and then back and forth. And then your friend is going to do curious things like really be interested in hanging out and then suddenly push you away and be rude. And this is what it's like to see the aftershocks of grief happen for a truly awful, traumatic, bolt out of the blue event. So we make it through that hour-long conversation where our 10-year-old diverts our attention to, "Oh, well, would you like to play the board game that I made for my vocabulary assignment?" And the answer is yes. And so we play a full round of this board game she made. And I look to Bonnie and I was like, I would like to go rent a very dark room for $13 and cry and eat pizza. And she said, "That would be better than you being here." And so that's exactly what I did. I went and watched Guardians 3 alone. And I'm like, "Hey man, look, I'm just gonna watch this." Made it about 10 seconds. It opens with an acoustic cover of Creep, and it shows Rocket being very sad. It shows baby raccoons being pulled out of a lab environment. And normally I'm very sensitive to piracy or whatever, or at least ever since we started doing the show. And I pull out my phone and I just unabashedly take a photo and I text Bonnie, "Made it 10 seconds, you know, and I just spent the next 2 hours, 2.5 hours, by the way, 30 minutes too long, just crying.
The 30 minutes too long thing. I felt the same way. Like, I didn't dislike it or even had a point where I'm like, well, they should have taken this part out. But it was a movie that I never checked my watch. I never wondered how much time was left until about 30 minutes before the end. Like right after they freed the animals, was the first time where I started to be like, okay, are we wrapping up? Are we done? And then it kept going. And that's not to say that anything that happened after that point, I was like, oh, I wish they weren't doing this. There was good stuff in there. I liked it, but it did. I finally hit my personal limit, maybe, I guess is how I'd put that.
Okay. So what I'd love to do is put a button on the sad parts and then only focus on what we loved about it. The one very most below, first of all, it's 20 to 30 minutes too long. And there are 2 to 3 too many songs wedged in there, but the cheapest, most below the belt maneuver. If you are familiar with the Flaming Lips song, Do You Realize? The lyrics are like, do you realize you have the most beautiful face ever? Do you realize some other amazing thing? Do you realize? And then there is a lyric where it says, do you realize that everyone you have ever known will someday die? But when they get up to that moment, and if you know the song, you know the lyric, he's like, do you realize everyone? What's that plot point? And I'm like, sorry, you're going to have to bleep this. Fuck you. That was below the belt because you made me sing the worst part or the most emotionally charged lyric of the entire song. And salute and middle finger to you, sir. It's kind of how I felt.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Brian, we don't bleep on After Talk.
Okay, so good.
Everyone will get to feel the full magnitude of.
No, I mean, and it's said with all respect and admiration. It's just like, that's how you get away with it.
Yeah, I thought the music choices, I thought he pulled it off again for me. I was smiling at the selections, Faith No More and Creep and I,
No Sleep because, Till Brooklyn.
Yeah, that was another good one. Because Guardians 1, it was like, he mined the 70s. Like he's playing on my particular nostalgia button. And then he mined the 80s, and I'm like, he's got my nostalgia button again. This is me in high school. This is me DJing dances. This is me working at the Rock Zone radio station. And then this one, it was like, I did it again. He's mining my nostalgia. This is stuff I played at the college station or on my own, bopping around Austin in my lost years. And after this, I realized, he's just really good at picking the songs that you aren't tired of, the songs that everyone else hasn't beaten into submission, and finding the perfect song to match the moment. Just like you said with the Flaming Lips, perfect example.
So let me play a game with you. I'm going to lock in my bet. We'll go on the honor system here, but the single best set piece of the entire movie, I suspect we'll both have the same answer. Mine is locked in. What was yours, Tom?
I don't know. I don't understand the question. I'm feeling kind of dumb right now.
Set piece, a 20 minute chunk. What was the single best 20-ish minute chunk?
I don't know if I have one. I hadn't thought about it before. The best run in the movie of stuff. I was kind of wall to wall enjoying it so much. You go first because I'm going to have to think about it, and maybe your example will prompt it because I don't really have an answer.
So we begin with a sad set piece of Rocket singing Creep and being sad about things. It's not at all clear why Rocket is sad. We see Star-Lord, who is sad for reasons we do know, because he lost Gamora and has like Gamora's bratty twin who doesn't like him or whatever.
I like the good dog part with Astro. That's just a Cosmo. Scene, Cosmo. Thank you. Yeah.
But another set piece would be the organic, like, what? It's an organically fueled mega structure or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I too have seen Rick and Morty. So I wasn't, everybody's wearing weird costume suits or whatever. The part that really sang for me, it was the Counter-Earth, 1950s to 1980s, whatever that was, the exact parallel, the brief moment where Star-Lord and Nebula are arguing, and he's trying to explain how to open a 1970s Cadillac door by pushing your thumb in and pulling the door out.
It was a bad design.
It was the best. Also, the perfectly ethnically ambiguous house that they go into, where they clearly don't speak English, but there is everything from glamour shots to yearbook photos to it was that is the whole thing could be collapsed into just that moment. I'd be happy.
Yeah. It was a string. The reason I had such a hard time answering you is like, it was a string of little moments. There was that moment in Guardians 1 where he's bopping across the plains, shooting the rats, listening to Come and Get Your Love. That is just amazing. I felt like Guardians 3 was more little bits, like the bit with the design, you know, the design thing, the bit where they call him Star-Lord unironically. And you think, wow, are they just going to let that go? And then he calls it out.
Why is it only people who hate me call me Star-Lord?
Call me Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Nathan Fillion just with the recurring bit of like, yeah, I got a guy like that too, which they set up beautifully with that little aside of him. You know, it was not, you know, saying, yeah, I know what you mean. He's like, I know you don't. I just made that up. And you're like, okay, that's a funny bit. But then they make something out of it. They call back to it. It's a lot of good little things like that. I was surprised that the entire plot was rescuing Rocket. I knew that we were getting Rocket backstory. And when they were like, we've got to save him, I'm like, okay, that's how we're going to see Rocket through the backstory. I liked the backstory. I thought it was heartbreaking. But I really did think like, okay, they're going to save Rocket in the first third, and then we'll get the real mission. I wasn't sure they could sell me on saving Rocket being the entire mission, but they made it big enough.
Well, I like the way you phrase that, saving Rocket, because saving Rocket doesn't mean saving his physical body. It also means saving his subconscious assessment of himself, which we eventually do get, right? Which means we have to do all respect and love. I loved the character and the creature design. I love the idea of taking various creatures and elevating them, evolutionary speaking. I love the fact that there was a design for the walrus where not only did it have a wheelchair, but it literally had mechanical bits that would blink its eyes for him because walruses aren't supposed to be above ground and all that. I love spider floors.
Spider rabbit.
Whatever it was, yeah. But it was so on the nose, and I think this movie suffered a little bit from showing up 2 years late. Like if I had seen two fewer seasons of Rick and Morty, I would have been more surprised by like the on the nose Stand By Me, Land Before Time aspects of the coming of age story that they wove in on that. But instead,
that's interesting. I never saw them once as parody. Thought of Rick and Morty the entire movie.
What's that?
I never once thought of Rick and Morty the entire movie.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
No, it was distracting for me. I kept thinking about the tales of the Rick Citadel or whatever it is, where there are four Mortys that go on a quest, and then meanwhile there's other stuff, and also they're big on like biological gloopy dupes or whatever, and then they kind of play that.
Ignorance is bliss is what I would say. Not that I didn't see Rick and Morty, but just the fact that I didn't think about it probably kept shielded me a little bit.
Yeah, that was. And now what's funny is you can't divorce your experience of watching art from your experience of watching the art. So I saw it in a very particular situation, and I'm very glad I did not take my children or my wife or anyone that day. I sat and cried. I cried for the personal difficult thing that happened. I cried for the end of an era. I cried thinking about how I began, like I was shooting Hacking the System when you and I saw the beginning of this, And then they roll credits and it's all like, you know, hey, remember this, remember this, remember this. Made me think about all the transformations that have come and gone since then. So I cried for a bazillion different reasons that had nothing to do with the actual plot of the show. Then the next day, Justin and I, before we recorded what is now episode 6 of season 3 of World's Greatest Con, we, you know, just were kind of trying to get loose and talked about the movie. We talked for an hour and a half, scene by scene, through everything. So that makes me suspect there's a lot there, and it's pretty good. It just, I know I'm definitely going to watch it again. I know I'm definitely going to probably bring my 15-year-old, but not my 10-year-old. it's worthy.
Yeah, I'm glad I went to see it in the theater. I may or may not see it again in the theater because Eileen loved it too, and was like, she told me before I left to go see it, because she saw it in preview without me. She was like, your expectations can't be too high. And I'm like, whoa, that's a dangerous thing to tell someone. And she was right. I did not in any way detract from my enjoyment of it. And whether I go see it in the theater again with her, because both of us are like, we should go see it together, or whether we just wait and watch it again, we're definitely going to watch it again, whether it's on streaming or in the theater.
Yeah. Going into it, I had heard Justin's very cautious caveats of it between Guardians 1 and Guardians 2, it has more of a Guardians 2 pacing. Mm. Take from that what you will. And also, he calls out one moment where they pull a what Dan Harmon calls a Monopoly Man, which is Dan Harmon gets famously upset when a joke is so on the nose as to be lazy. He calls out in some Ace Ventura movie that I ain't seen. He says, and this guy looks like a Monopoly Man, and then pans over. And the guy's definitely on purpose dressed like a Monopoly Man. There's a moment like that in one of the scenes. So those were the only two negatives that I knew to look out for.
I liked how they handled Gamora and just having her be like, yeah, I don't remember you. I don't like you. It's consistent to where she was in the restore point of Gamora. And we didn't get a like, oh, and just like in one, he brought her along, but we got an evolving of her, of a different Gamora. And I like that. I like that choice.
Speaking of which, I really enjoyed the brief sort of implication that looks to me like you're into Nebula, and then that
was
1 minute
bit.
Moment
yeah.
was great.
But okay, well,
I just never noticed how pretty your black eyes were. It's like you didn't realize
there were a lot of nice real moments like that, which James Gunn is really good at, of like let's inject some real awkward humanity into these situations rather than, you know, having them paint by numbers.
Well, as we wrap up, this is a crass thing, but I don't know when this was shot, but I did notice, whoa, why are they all wearing matching Star Trek style uniforms right now? And then I thought to myself, huh, if I was a producer, I would think that's a good way to hide everyone being about 7 pounds heavier than they want to be.
Interesting conspiracy theory.
Oh no, it's not even a conspiracy theory, because I believe Bautista tweeted out, hey, I'm done with Drax. I can no longer be that fit. Nobody wants to see a flabby late 50s guy pretending to be a destroyer. James Gunn publicly responded saying, well, you'll always be Drax in my heart. And then smash cut to, so now you're all putting on uniforms, huh? All right. All right.
Okay.
And what did you think of the Rocket becoming the new leader of the Guardians?
Great. I was
the guy they had to save? Seems like a bad choice.
Again.
Yeah, you know, you just had to save this guy.
Yeah.
Now you want to make him more important? Okay.
Be fair.
Then City has to save.
He was killed by a Harry Styles lookalike.
Let's play a game, Bryce.
What?
It's called The Post Credit Scene Has a Very Prominent Product Placement from a Sponsor of Modern Rogue.
Uh-huh.
Which sponsor do you think it was?
We've had a lot of sponsors over the years.
I agree. Which one do you think would merit being in a post-credits product placement scene?
I don't know the answer to this either, because I don't remember there being product placement.
Yeah, I don't. What was Squarespace, because they made it.
Because I remember them all giving their musical recommendations, and I liked that. Warlock brought up Adrian Belew and King Crimson. I thought that was they all had very fitting music recommendations for their personalities. But what was the product placement?
In the post-credit scene, two characters have a quiet moment where one is reading the newspaper and the
The other post-credit scene. I thought, because we were talking about Rocket leaving Guardians, I thought we were talking about the first post-credit scene. You're talking about the one with Star-Lord coming back to his grandpa?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
And his grandpa is reading the newspaper, and Star-Lord is eating cereal, specifically Magic Spoon brand cereal, the high-protein, low-carb, wonderful sponsor of ours. But anyway.
Oh, that's okay.
I didn't even catch that. That's cool. I thought that was just a made-up brand. I didn't realize that was the sponsor.
Nope. They paid for part of everything that's happening right now.
That's amazing. That's very cool.
Interesting.
Any other thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
I liked it a lot. You know, maybe 20 minutes too long for my taste. Maybe two more songs than I think Mary did.
It's funny. You're the first person to agree with me on it. On that aspect of it. And I have to keep bending over backwards to say, that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy the extra 30 minutes. It just means like that was the point where I first felt like, oh, it's not over yet.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess we're done.
There we go. Thanks everybody for tuning into After Talk, for being supporters here on patreon.com. Thank you guys.
On Patreon.
Got him.
Yeah, got him.
Get him.
All right. Bye, everybody.